Whispering Streets. And here is Bette Davis.
Hello. Pamela Morrison was flying from New York to San Francisco. She was on her way to a new job. She'd make a stop over in Detroit and visit a business contact. She'd take a Convair to another city in Michigan to see another associate, and then California, here I come. In her seat just above the wing, she closed her eyes. There was Dick as she'd seen him first 24 months ago at a studio party. He'd sauntered across the room, slumped himself beside her.
You don't belong here, lady.
Huh?
Everybody else is wearing lounging pajamas and pleasant things. You're so trim in your tailored suit. You're so cool and detached. I'm Dick Morrison, commercial artist. More artist than commercial. What's your name? What do you do?
I'm Pamela Morris. I'm a buyer for a department store.
I thought you were a career girl. Well, let's hold hands and get acquainted. You have pretty hands.
I have efficient hands.
I say they're pretty. I like your fingers.
Don't.
I wasn't kissing them, I was smelling them. The smell of good soap, not a trace of perfume. I like everything about you. What do you like about me?
Well, I like the way your hair curls back in your forehead like a little boy's. Your mouth's curly, too. I like your mouth.
Wait till you know it better. Do you carry a compact in your purse?
Yes.
Well, then take a good look at yourself. You're blushing like a 16-year-old.
As a matter of fact, I'm 36.
You don't look 36.
I look every year of my age, and I know it.
Well, you won't when I mussed up that smooth hair of yours and sold you on wearing fluffy clothes. At the right time and place, of course.
They had dinner together in a quiet little restaurant. They went dancing until very late. Pam was dead on her feet when she went to the store the next morning. But she perked up the next evening when she was having dinner with Dick. When dinner was over...
You're not my sort of woman and I'm not your sort of man. But if we play the cards right, we might achieve a blinding sort of ecstasy. I'm warning you, Pam. Don't marry me. Of course, I can guarantee you a certain amount of fun if you do.
Fun? Oh, that word was left out of my vocabulary, Dick, when I was a child. I've worked since I was 15.
No time for romance?
Mm-mm. No time at all.
Oh, I can't imagine a life with fun and romance left out of it. Hey, I'm taking you to a party next Friday. We'll learn something about romance.
The plane was above the clouds now. Pamela Morrison pushed a button and her seat tilted back. And memories continued to parade through her mind. After the party, she and Dick had driven down to Maryland. They'd been married while the dawn came up like thunder. They were the happiest people in the world. And then after the honeymoon, when they came back to the city, Pamela learned that Dick had turned down an order.
I always draw and paint and make layouts, but I can't always be a newly married man. Oh, Pam, you're a constant surprise. You're so wonderful to be with. I want you all to myself for a few more days.
Oh, darling, be sensible. The point is that you're neglecting your work.
Well, it'll catch up with me sooner or later.
I balanced your checkbook today, Dick. You know you're overdrawn.
I don't want you to balance my checkbook. I've never kept it straight, and I never will. I'm often overdrawn.
Oh, you're so slap-happy about money. You know, my salary, although it's much less than you make, is our only security.
Well, who wants security? Security's for people who haven't anything else. As a matter of fact, Tim, I want you to give up your job.
I wouldn't dare.
It might be very good for me if you gave up your job. I might achieve a sense of responsibility if I had to take care of you. This is a crucial moment, Pam. Think hard, girl. Don't make a mistake now.
In just a moment, Bette Davis will be back again. But first...
The moment you're on, it's time to realize.
You've got a potato, baby.
A safe, convenient phrase.
reindeer say, big time in America, how USA things fun.
Have you noticed that money seems to go out faster than you can save it? Why not join the payroll savings plan for the purchase of United States savings bonds? It's safe, it's sure, and it works. Sign up soon and see your bonds grow for your family's growing needs.
Don't always remember, it's a proud way to save. It's not in America, at U.S. savings bonds.
To our story with Betty Davis.
Pamela Morrison saw a pretty stewardess hurrying down the aisle. All stewardesses were pretty, she told herself, and remembered how she'd refused to admit that all brides should be pretty. She kept her job. She continued to wear tailored suits. And though Dick fussed a bit, he didn't mind too much. Not until the Florida controversy.
Darling, we're going to Palm Beach.
Oh.
I'm to do some promotional drawing for a new hotel. All expenses paid and a fat check besides.
Oh, wonderful.
Now, you must get some new sport clothes and some new dinner things. I'll buy you a crazy bathing suit in Florida.
Oh, Palm Beach sounds like heaven. When, Dick?
We leave tomorrow, fairly late in the afternoon. Oh. Now, if you shop like mad all morning, you can get the clothes you need.
Dick, I can't go tomorrow. We're taking inventory. It's our busiest time.
Oh, that's right. Something is happening at the store. I recall vaguely now that you mentioned it. Well, I guess I can wait a couple of days.
A couple of days?
Sure. That'll give you time to break someone else in.
Well, nobody else can handle things, especially not on 2 days' notice until inventory's over, Dick. As much as my job's worth.
Tell me something, Pam. Is your job worth more than our marriage?
No, of course not.
Well, then give it up. Tell them you're quitting in a week. I'm leaning over backwards, but I'm sure I can stall them off for a week.
I can't quit. Dick, it's not only my responsibility to the store. It's my responsibility to myself. I've been building this job, Dick, since I was a child.
You've had the job 20 years. You've only had me for a couple of months.
That's true, of course.
Would you want me to go to Florida alone? I'll sketch a good many women, society girls, models. Some of them will be knockouts. Some of them might be irresistible.
I'd hate it if you went to Palm Beach without me. If you fell for some glamour girl, I'd go out of my mind, but a job's a job.
You really mean what you just said?
Yes. You just wait 2 weeks.
Palm Beach will blow up in my face. The hotel wants action. And besides, I don't like to wait. I want action, too.
Pam, you're crying. I never saw you cry before. Don't cry, Pam.
Well, it's out of character.
Pamela left the plane at Detroit. She tied quite a few loose ends in an hour and a half and boarded a conveyor. A slim plane that seemed to rise straight in the air at the takeoff. It flew far below the clouds, had to come down all along the line at tiny whistle stops. After the Florida fiasco, Pam had ceased to live above the clouds. Summer came and the Morrisons were getting along fairly well, and then they were invited on the beach.
Oh, I'd love to go, really, but...
The job?
Oh, the heck with the job. I'll work twice as hard tomorrow to make up for playing rookie.
Now, that I like to hear. Well, not the last part of your statement, the first.
We won't stay late, dear. I'll get a good night's sleep, and God, after so much fresh air and sunshine, I'll feel chipper enough to lick my weight in wildcat.
Oh, not only chipper, darling. Ironed out. All the wrinkles smoothed away. I'm going to buy you a white bathing suit that'll fit tighter than your own skin. The sort I hope to buy you in Palm Beach.
The picnic was fine. From 11 o'clock in the morning until 9 at night. And then Dick, overwhelmed by the good time they were having, invited the gang back to their apartment for sandwiches and coffee. Once there, Pam took him aside.
Oh, Dick, I'm awfully tired. I've got to get up early tomorrow. This gang of wild Indians will stick around till morning. Now, give them their sandwiches and their coffee and send them away. Please, darling, for my sake.
I can't, darling. I'm the host. If I gave them the bum's rush, it would be all over town tomorrow that I'm tied to my wife's apron strings.
All right, then you just have to ask your friends to excuse me. I'm going to bed.
Very well, my dear. Go to bed alone. And like it.
The conveyor seemed to go so low at times that it touched the treetops. Once it came down in a little place, it was hardly more impressive than a cow pasture. As Pamela stared out of the window, she saw a pale child on the porch of a house that needed paint. It had an air of patient poverty about it. Although it was a warm day, the child was wrapped in a blanket. The child waved and the stewardess waved back. And then as the plane resumed its flight, Pamela again was lost in memories. Petty quarrels, one after another. She and Dick had seemed to disagree on almost every subject. And then later in the summer, they spent a weekend with some people who had a couple of children. And during a moment of truth...
Gosh, I'd like to have a baby. How about it, Pam?
Well, if a baby just happened, I guess I wouldn't mind, but... Well, a baby hasn't just happened yet. I'm getting on toward 40.
Well, then, if it doesn't happen soon, let's adopt one. An adopted baby will be next best to a baby of our own.
Babies are sweet, but...
There's your job to be considered, am I right?
Well, only partially right. If I had a baby of my own, I'd give up my job, of course. And if I had an adopted baby, I'd give up my job. But that isn't the main consideration.
Don't you think I'd make a good father?
You take things so very easily.
Well, let's just say I take them in my stride. As a matter of fact, Pam, I play with a kid all the time. I'd be the best father in 7 states.
The best father, but the worst commercial artist. And I wouldn't be earning anything, so who'd buy us food and clothing?
Don't be foolish. A child would give me an incentive such as I've never had before. Well, once upon a time, I thought a wife would give me an incentive, but it didn't work out. Main reason being that my wife could take care of herself. Pam, I want a child more than I can tell you. Someone, either my own flesh and blood or adopted, to carry on my name. Someone to hold close.
You have me.
Can't hold you close enough, Pam. The job keeps crowding in between us, forcing us apart.
You're jealous of my job.
Oh, I'm not jealous of it. I'm just plain bored with it. Pam, I have a feeling that this is our last chance. If we don't have some common interest, our marriage is apt to fall apart. In the beginning, there was a real physical attraction and a real hope and a real faith and a real promise of fulfillment, but now they're done. In the beginning, there was the power and the glory, but that's gone too.
Dick.
You don't like my friends, Pam, and you don't trust me enough to let me support you. You won't even adopt some lost, lonely child who could give us his love and receive our love. So what's left for us?
What's left for us? Well, that's a silly thing to say. We can go on just as we are, Dick.
Oh, no, we can't. There's no point to it.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back again. But first...
In his first inaugural address, President Grover Cleveland reminded the American people that every voter, as well as the president whom they elect, exercises a public trust when he casts his ballot. By not forsaking that trust, all of us, civilian and military alike, recognize the importance of elections based on the democratic principle... The foundation of authority is in the free consent of the people.
And now back to our story with Betty Davis.
A conveyor flying low. Soon Pamela would be at her last Michigan stop. After that, San Francisco and a new job. Pamela remembered how she'd stared at Dick, scarcely seeing him, because of the tears on her lashes. She remembered how her voice had trembled when finally she spoke.
Dick, you're hurting me.
I'm sorry. But you've hurt me quite a bit in your own way in your time. Once you said in a moment of rejection, it would be as much as my job's worth.
That was when I couldn't go to Palm Beach.
You mean when you wouldn't go? Pam, what is a job worth if it's hollow? I'm beginning to think that we should separate.
But why? We never quarreled the way some people do. You remember Lana and Lou Saxon? They were practically throwing dishes when we saw them last up in Maine. We don't spit out ugly words as the Turners do. We don't have slugging matches like the Maxwells. We're civilized.
Yes, and I almost wish we weren't. A good free-for-all would clear the air. Oh, Pam, I think it's just time we said goodbye.
Permanently?
I'm afraid so. A man wants a woman who plays a game along lines that he can recognize.
What game, Dick?
A game of marriage, of life.
Oh, this is absurd and hateful. You're just using that baby business as an excuse. You've met some other woman, you've fallen for her.
Skip it, Pam. I haven't fallen for anybody, and I'm not using anything as an excuse. I'm far too tired and fed up to make excuses. Believe me, I am.
Pam got out of the Condor in the Michigan City and tied her last loose thread. Her last loose business thread. She embarked in Chicago on the final hop to California, and as once again a plane rose above the clouds, she was thinking of the way in which she and Dick had behaved on those last few days together. Dick had made the arrangement.
I must see a lawyer first.
About a divorce?
We'll begin with a legal separation. It's easier in the long run. Once we have a legal separation, a divorce won't be any problem.
I don't believe in divorce, Dick.
Neither do I. But what do you say we sublet our apartment? Or do you want to stay on in it?
No, I certainly do not. It'll be full of echoes.
I agree with you there. Okay, then, we'll sublet the apartment furnished. There's a waiting list in our building. I'll stay with Hal Barker, and you can go to a hotel. Naturally, I'll pay for it.
You'll pay nothing. I'll rent a small house in the suburbs. I'll buy it if necessary. Remember, Dick, you're the one who suggested all this. Yeah.
But you were the one who forced the issue. Remember that, Pam.
So they visited the lawyer and followed through on their plans on where and how to live. And Dick went to live with a fellow artist, and Pamela moved into a small house in the suburbs. And on Saturdays and Sundays, she putted dolefully in the garden. It wasn't until 5 months had passed that she found Dick. When he came on the wire...
Dick Morrison speaking.
Dick, this is Pamela. I have something to tell you.
You mean you've missed me?
I called to tell you that I've been offered a new job in California.
You've accepted it?
Yes. It's better to have a continent between us, Dick, than just a few miles.
Oh, definitely. There's so much width to a continent, isn't there? But good luck, Pam.
Back in her seat with her eyes closed, seeing pictures of herself and Dick, so many of them intimate pictures. They were photographed on her eyelids. It was quite a while later that the young stewardess, whose name, according to the card up front, was Esme Russell, stopped beside her and spoke.
I just want to remind you to change your watch, Mrs. Morris.
What? Oh, my goodness, I forgot all about changing my watch. I hadn't thought of the time difference between the East and West Coast since I started. What a fool I am.
You're not the only one in this plane who's saying what a fool I am. Well, you've gained 3 hours, Mrs. Morrison.
Oh.
You know, you do look very tired. But then, of course, you've done a lot of traveling in one day.
Her watch back 3 hours. There was darkness under the plane now. She couldn't see the clouds. She thought, I've gained more than 3 hours. I've gained perspective and a new point of view. When the plane came down at its destination, she said goodbye to Esme Russell and hurried toward the barrier. But she didn't go toward a cab stand. She left her suitcases in the luggage room and made her way to a telegraph office in the airport. She sent a local wire and then hurried to a telephone booth and lifted the receiver from its hook and gave the long-distance operator a number. She dropped in the required amount of money and waited. And as she waited, her mind was working overtime. Her thoughts went something like this.
Here I am in San Francisco. But it's hail and farewell. The wire I sent to my new boss was very definite. I said I'd reconsidered, but I couldn't take the job. I've done the most daring thing I've ever done. I've burned my bridges before there's even a rowboat in sight. I've always been called an efficient businesswoman.
New York operator, here's your party. Ready, California?
Now I'm going to be just a woman. I made Dick love me once. I can do it again. Yes, operator. I'm ready.
Another trip began. Sometimes the return trip can be more exciting than the trip that's taken you to a new place. Sometimes it's more fun to conquer a city for the second time than it is to conquer a new city. And now, do you remember how Esme Russell, the stewardess, waved to a little girl wrapped up in blankets who was seated on the porch of a house that needed paint? What did Esme Russell know about this little child?
And now here again is Betty Davis.
What was wrong with the child who sat blanket-wrapped on the porch of the shabby house? Well, Esme Russell discovered what was wrong, and with her heart heavy, did her best to bring a last glow of happiness into the tragic little life. You will hear Esme's rewarding story. Until then, this is Betty Davis saying goodbye. From the Whispering Street.
Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast were Lillian Baeff, Jack Edwards, and Charlotte Lawrence. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is Dan Cumberley.
Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.